Good morning, everybody. You are listening to the new and improved OC Caravan. I'm Jim Bastian. Scott Hayes is under the weather this morning, so I'm going to be filling in. And I think it's appropriate that we're playing David Bowie's Changes because we're going through some changes here. We're no longer Radio Caravan. We're OC Caravan back in the new year after a little two-week break. We're here, as always, with Jill Harvey, our healthy lifestyles coach.
Good morning.
Hi, Jill. How are you? And Kiri Muiz, arts,
culture,
everything.
Everything.
And engineer April Johnson.
Good morning, Jim.
Everybody have a great holiday.
Woo! It was great.
Yeah. Phenomenal.
2 weeks off. Did you miss me?
Very much, Jim.
I bet.
Yes. What I'm excited to hear about is your airplane flight.
What happened? Goodness. Wow. What a crazy holiday experience. So I went back to New York and Connecticut to visit my sister with the whole family. And, you know, you hear about flying today and how just painful it is. I live that experience. I mean, first of all, you're flying across the country, so it's a long flight. You're traveling with six people, kids, you got bags, you got everything else. And you know, when you're traveling with that many people, you're kind of stuck in the back. And I don't want to sound like a snob, but when I fly on business, I'm up front and it's really easy. It's by myself. I'm nimble. Yeah. I can get through everything.
Got a little elbow room.
Yeah. So we were coming back, mad dash to the airport. We get through, we're fine. We get on the plane and we're ready to take off. And we're getting on the plane and I look in our row and I hear something. It's just, meow.
No way.
This lady's sitting there inside with a cat. And on Virgin America, you can actually bring your pets on board as long as the carry-on is the proper size. And so she's there. Okay, we're going to deal with the cat. The cat's probably going to freak out the whole time. Right. Lady gets on the plane, and she's obnoxious. You know, typical New Yorker. She's got a fur coat. She's got dark hair. She's like, you know, everyone's got to know her. She's putting her stuff around. And she's moving from one seat to the other. She takes her shoes off. She's wandering around the plane. This is before we're boarding. She's, like, wandering around the place.
Wow.
This really large man gets in front of me and sits down. And he immediately, like, the seat falls back in my lap.
Fantastic.
He's got the belt extender and the whole thing. And turns out the lady who's obnoxious, she's sitting in the middle between the cat lady and the fat guy. So she's trying to wiggle her way in there. And she's, like, not – and the guy's like, this is your seat? He's like, that's my seat. And she's like – well, I paid for this seat, and I'm going to be in this seat, and it was crazy. And so then she gets seated. Then it turns out some guy gets on the plane and says, ma'am, that cat carrier is too big. Well, it turns out the lady with the cat doesn't speak English. She's Russian.
Oh, goody.
And she's looking up at him like, what the heck is this? Well, 20 minutes later, they get her off the plane with the cat because she's not going to leave the cat. And so then the lady, who was very obnoxious next to the fat guy, decides not to move over to the empty seat. And he's like, what are you doing? And they start having a confrontation, and they got to get the stewardess involved, and it's, like, just crazy. And then she finally moves over to the seat in the window to get space between them, but she decides to kick her feet up right in front of him.
Oh, my God.
And my wife looks over, and her feet are, like, black.
Nasty.
Just disgusting. And the whole flight, she's getting up and down, and she's swearing all over the place, and it was just, you know, one of these things. And, of course, the flight was crazy bumpy turbulence the whole way. They had the flight attendants were strapped in for most of the flight, and it was just like...
Oh.
Not great.
Do you get motion sickness during that or anything?
I don't.
Oh, my gosh.
I hope things were well once you landed.
No, it was great.
All uphill after that is what I'm hoping. Waiting for the happy ending, looking for the silver lining.
So just a reminder, OC Caravan, you can watch us on television on Cox 3. As Scott would say, 250,000 cable subscribers throughout Southern California. That airs at 8 p.m. on Saturday and 12 noon on Sunday. We've got a lot of great shows coming up this year, a lot of you know, great things that we did towards the end of last year that are going to be airing in the next couple of weeks. So a lot of
wonderful.
Great things there. But why don't we jump into it?
Yeah. Wanted to just say, Jim, there's just something I was just telling Sandy, there's just something, and Jill, that there's something extremely magical about 2015. I don't know if you guys can feel it. And it's not just the fact that it's a new year. There's just something in the air.
It's a buzz.
And yeah, everything's just like manifesting and it's all here. It's all happening. So I'm Kiri Muiz here, getting you up to speed on all things art and culture related in Orange County. And right now, it's not about what's happening in Orange County, but who is happening in Orange County. And that who that I've chosen for today's segment is the very brilliant Elizabeth Turk. And for those who don't know who Elizabeth Turk is, she is an Orange County-based sculptor. Born in Pasadena, has been based in Orange County pretty much her whole life. She maintained a studio in New York and was splitting that time between Orange County and New York, and now is just primarily based in Orange County. She was the 2010 MacArthur Genius Award recipient. And for those who don't know what the MacArthur Grant is, the MacArthur Foundation gives this award, a fellowship, which has been dubbed the Genius Award, to recipients. And they are given $500,000, no questions asked, no strings attached.
Wow.
And that is to help them cultivate. It's like a very, it's the most, one of the most prestigious awards you can receive in the United States. And she's right here in our own backyard. So something extremely to be proud of.
What does she do?
She creates sculptures that that are reflexive of natural patterns. So very scientific. Her sculptures right now are currently at the Laguna Art Museum.
Okay.
The show's closing January 18th. It is a must-see event. They're skeletal, they're helix and matrix based, and it's marble. So she does the impossible by making, by taking something that's completely impossible and intangible and making it malleable and possible. And so this distinction among sculptures, Katie and I both have already seen the exhibition and were blown away. And Katie, who is our intern, she thought that these were 3D printed, and they aren't. There's actual video of Elizabeth in her studio, and she is this petite and beautiful waif-like woman going at this huge marble structure that's, you know, maybe 600 pounds literally, and going to town with it and scaling it down and scaling it down, and to the point where by the time she's done with it, it'll look like a molecule. There's different forms. She has a collar series, different forms, but it'll weigh about 60 pounds by the time she's done with it, and she'll go at it with circular saws and all types of, you know, drills and things like that. And I had the most pleasant conversation with her. First of all, I'm just excited to know there's another artist up at 4 a.m. like me. So she's up at 4 a.m. We actually talked this morning and talked yesterday. And it was just the first thing we said was like, oh my gosh, I can't believe someone else is up as early as I am.
Where is she based?
Her current studio's in Santa Ana.
Okay.
And so that's where she works out of. And she likes to resurrect. She says, you know, sculpting is such an ancient tradition, and kind of reconciling that with technology and resurrecting the forms of marble and bringing it together. Some of her pieces take 2 years. There was an installation where there were several pieces considered to be one body of art, and that took her a decade to complete.
Wow.
So there's a lot of love, a
How
lot of labor. You know,
Would you guess?
I would never, a lady never tells, you know? You know,
I'm just curious. You know, younger person, middle age?
You know, I'm 37, so she's older than me.
Good.
So let's just
go with that.
Yeah. You're certain she's older than you?
Oh, I'm definitely, okay. Yeah, I'm definitely certain. And, and you know, there's an intimacy with art, and a lot of what behind the scenes, you know, I guess you could call them artist problems. We kind of had quite a few chuckles about, she said, you know, she's working with so much dust and all the marble dust that she feels like the sculptures are sculpting her, you know,
wow.
And that's, you know, she's like, I'm physically changing because of all the materials that I'm working with over time. And there is a connection to that ritual. You know, once as an artist, you take that conception and it becomes part of your daily routine to execute a piece. It's an interesting marriage of sorts. And so she was talking about that marriage and how that's embedded, and there's a certain emotion, a connection, and it's I think that's kind of universal among artists, and that's probably a viewpoint that a lot of listeners probably don't consider.
Yeah, so for you, for example,
mm-hmm.
do you work on one piece at a time?
I do, and she works on multiple pieces, but I like to do the incubation, and it's one piece at a time for me.
Kieran, would you say, when I was listening to you speak mm-hmm. about this, it sounds like a meditation you guys almost go into.
But there is love-hate part to the meditation. There is. It's almost like, and she hit the nail on the hammer.
The hammer on the nail? The nail on the head?
Yeah.
Right.
It's 2015. I'm just flowing, guys. I'm just, yeah, sorry. Sorry about that. She hit the nail on the hammer. The hammer on the nail.
The nail on the head.
There you go.
We're back on.
Yeah, we're on track now. But, you know, there's a part of it where when I'm painting and it's taken me a year and I'm just meditating on the same piece, it's almost like, I don't want to say like a masochistic thing, or I just feel like, I told her, I said, you know, I'm looking at this canvas and I feel like am I on restriction? And am I on punishment? Because when I was a little kid, my parents, they didn't spank. They made us put our nose against the wall and raise our hand above our heads. And they'd sit there in a chair until the blood rushed down your arms. And you were like in tears. And there's your lesson. And you'd almost like wish you'd have been hit with a belt, you know, by the time that this is done. And so when I'm painting sometimes and I'm staring at these canvases for hours on end and sketching, and I'm just like, does this own me? Or, you know, who's creating who here? And it's not always beautiful.
So, yeah, so it's work.
Oh, it is excruciatingly painful sometimes. And what's crazy is the almost the most paranoid, extreme, contradistinctive from the beauty, the most craziest thought, like that Associated Press was like, oh, what was your thought when you were doing it? I'm like, you don't want to know, because the crazier, I think, it's almost like the more beautiful the artwork is. And it's strange, but... yeah, so I just think Elizabeth Turk is so phenomenal that she's an artist that I'm going to have to revisit at a later date and time, because, you know, she just is brilliant. Like, the genius is certifiable.
Maybe we can bring her in.
Yeah, absolutely. And that's one of great. The things she did with her sculptures, and this tells you how much genius and crazy, one of her sculptures took about 3 years to create. It's one of the pieces that are on display at LAM right now. So see it while you can. She took it to the Huntington Beach Pier with the intention of destroying it after the 3 years it took to create it.
It's like a sandcastle.
Yeah. So we're talking about this hard, intricate marble structure. She took it to the pier, and there's a little bit. Sorry, Jill is.
Sandy,
sorry.
And Jill.
Oh, sorry.
Nothing.
So there's a little bit of. She took it and was thinking it was so delicate, because the one thing that grabs me is. The molecule-like structures of her sculptures, the matrix, the science in it, one false move and the whole thing crumbles. And so she thought taking it and placing it in the sand, letting the water rush over it at the Huntington Beach Pier, it was going to destroy the art. And it didn't happen. The sculpture actually stayed intact, and she wasn't anticipating that. And there's actually video of that process at LAM where you could see her and her reaction, like, oh my gosh, this did not explode.
What's LAM?
LAM, sorry, the Laguna Art Museum.
Okay,
I am so sorry. I thought I said the acronym earlier.
I'm learning.
Thanks for bringing me back to planet Earth. And so she started that piece in New York, and after 9/11 happened, she put all of the intensity of that event into this particular sculpture. And took it to the ocean, completed it in Orange County, kind of had a release and this kind of aha moment where it was almost like the piece was a dialogue about the community and the international community and us, and just a microcosm of a bigger picture that we're so much stronger than we think.
Right.
And we're so much more resilient than we could ever imagine we possibly are. So I highly recommend catching Elizabeth Turk in action while you can.
No, that sounds great. That's actually appropriate for this week with mm-hmm. everything that happened in Paris,
yes.
and where we are,
oh,
and
goodness.
Always
yes.
constant reminders of where we are in the world
yes.
today. So it's a great message. So.
Yes.
Excuse me, Karen, thank you very much
yeah,
for that.
So.
Just a reminder, you're listening to KX93.5, Laguna's only FM. I'm Jim Bastian, filling in today for Scott Hayes, who's a little bit under the weather. He'll be joining us, I'm sure, next week. I recovered from the same cold. But as always, we're here with our healthy living coach, healthy lifestyle coach, and healthy lifestyle goddess.
Mm-hmm. I like that.
Jill Harvey.
Better. Thank you.
Jill, you know, coming out of the holidays, I just felt so unhealthy. Mm. My whole body was toxic after all the eating and drinking and parties and everything else. I actually went on a full crazy, just I'm shutting everything down this week. And so I've been probably ate better and behaved better this week than I have in like
good,
a year.
Good
so.
Boy, yes.
But it wasn't a New Year's resolution.
No, good.
It was just I'm going to just clean the
turn
decks.
Over a new leaf
yeah,
and get
so.
Started.
What do you have for us as we
well,
start the new
you know,
year
hey,
here?
Before we get started, I just want to talk to you guys about something that's trending that kind of is like, freaking me out. So on Facebook, they have a new technology that is going to scan your photos for you. And before they post them, because they're going to scan them, and they're message you and say, are you sure you want to post these? You look drunk.
Oh, that's. Wow, I think that's clever.
Right? I think, but all my photos, I'll look drunk because I'm always like, hey! You know, so I don't know. I mean, how are they doing this? How are they determining with technology?
That seems
hey,
crazy.
You have a glimmer in your eye.
Another reason for me not to be on Facebook.
Oh, come
that's
on,
interesting.
Jim. It's five. All right, well, no one has an answer for
so
me.
So you won't
no.
have any pictures
idea.
On there?
I guess not.
You'll be like, Jill's drunk all the time.
All the time.
You'll be like blocked. Or
April, have you seen the picture of Jill on the club website for where she teaches at Renaissance?
No, I haven't.
It's pretty funny. She's got this look on her face of intensity, but yeah. as I think about it, you do look a little drunk in that picture.
Thank you. Hey, you know what a way to live.
Drunk.
But yeah,
drunk with fitness.
Who was
drunk
the IT mind who exactly. came up with this? Oh yeah, this is a drunk on a scale of 1 to 10. Definitely drunk.
That's right. That's right. Well, today, are we ready? So April reminded me actually last week that January is Cervical Cancer Awareness Month. I'm not going to stay long on this because I want to go somewhere else, but it's a great reminder for women. It is, you can go to healthywomen.org, and it's a fabulous reminder that women need to take care of themselves, and we have so many options these days with technology and different sources of health lifestyles that you can jump on board with and be healthy. But every year, there are 12,000 women diagnosed with cervical cancer, and one-third of them will die.
Wow.
Now, this is more treatable, more preventable than ever before because they have new screenings and they have the vaccination for the HPV, the human papilloma virus.
Yes.
To me, you know, vaccinations are questionable, right? But they really recommend it for girls and women ages 11 to 26 so that your chances will be decreased of developing cervical cancer because they've seen a relationship to that virus with that. And then you know, when we're looking at symptoms, this can be very silent, and some women may not know until it's in advanced stages. So that's kind of scary. But if you do end up with any kind of abnormal vaginal bleeding, we can say that we're, we're adults, right?
Yes.
Any unusual discharge. But by the way, Jim, men, they're actually encouraging young boys and men to start getting inoculated, maybe. And again,
for
I'm
cervical
not,
cancer?
Well, no, for cervical cancer, yes. No, for the HPV.
Oh, okay.
Because both men and women.
Just,
but do I have one
both
of those?
Men,
I,
no,
yeah.
But both men and women can carry the HPV.
Yeah. Right, no.
Right, so, okay, right. So
it's a big issue,
it is
actually,
a huge
you
issue.
Hear about it. Throat cancers can develop from the HPV.
Exactly. Who was that?
Michael Douglas. But you know, everything has flu-like symptoms. That's what's so scary.
Especially right now where everybody seems to be sick.
That's right. So anything, if you have unusual discharge or periods that have a heavier flow or last longer than normal or bleeding after menopause. So just, you know, please check in with your doctor. Get
great.
The screenings.
Scott leaves. I'm here with three women. And
we're
going,
talking about this.
We're going
Jim,
hardcore.
Jim, now we are going to diverge and talk about something else cervical. Hey, Scott's in the background.
We miss Scott.
We have Scott in his, he's in an incubator.
Scott, all the estrogen's taking over the show.
Quarantine.
So we're going to diverge into something else cervical, and that would be the cervical spine.
Okay.
So I think that's really important. So just women go to
I think I have that, right?
You do have that one.
Okay, good.
Yeah.
Just want to make sure we're on the same page.
Okay.
So healthywomen.org, by the way, for women. All right. So some people may not know that I'm also a neuromuscular and sports injury massage therapist.
Ooh.
So I'm really attuned to the body and the anatomy. So with the neck, you notice, think of the head as a bowling ball.
Okay.
It's not hard for me.
We hope there's stuff in there. And that the cervical discs are like a stack of pennies. And that's how much pressure these discs are taking. And you see people who are so disrespecting their neck and their spine, and especially these days with technology and driving, sit up tall. They're
going to stand up. Yeah, standing up straight now.
So the discs in the neck are the thinnest and the most fragile, but they're also flexible. So how many discs do we have in our neck?
Is it 52 or 62?
In our neck.
In our neck.
Cervical discs.
Probably like 12. I'm throwing that out there.
13.
I'm gonna say $1.
Okay, I'll take that dollar because
can I
you're
phone
all
a
wrong.
Friend?
You're all wrong. You can phone a friend. We have 7. So what we think of in the spine, check this out, you'll love this. Breakfast at 7 for the 7 cervical disc, lunch at 12 for the 12 thoracic discs, dinner at 5 for the 5 lumbar discs, and then wine at 9 because the sacrum and the coccyx are a series of 5 and 4 bones that fuse together. So you like that? Breakfast at 7. Lunch at noon, dinner at 5, and wine at 9.
You're welcome for that. I'm sleeping at 9.
I wine at 9. My lower back is where my issues are.
Yeah.
So
right, so we're going to do another show on that.
Big whiner.
Hey, you know what we'll do? We'll do another show on that, and I'll have them film it, and we'll do some exercises.
Yeah,
but when you look at people, we have a lot of problems with stiff, sore necks. And we have a lot of issues to be concerned about with the children coming up because they're like this on their smart tablets. Their heads are
like
leaning forward.
We're on radio.
I know. So for those listeners, the head is leaning forward, way out ahead of the body.
Mm-hmm.
You can also see that when people are walking. There's this lurching forward. The chin is jutting forward. And their head is almost like looks like it's not part of the rest of the spine. And people forget that that's a part of it.
You know what my issue is? And people in my office tease me. I'm on the phone all the time. Yes. And for years, they've been telling me, get a headset. But I don't. I do.
Yeah, and that's bad,
too. I crank the phone on my right side.
That cradling.
So people watch me walk around the office, and they go, why do you always walk with your head to the right?
Right.
And it's because I've conditioned my neck to go that way from being on the phone. So it's horrible. I'm a train wreck, so.
Well, we'll work on you, Jen. We'll fix you. You know, it's a new year, new way. But, you know, we've heard of rubbernecking. You know, people are rubbernecking, right?
Yeah.
But the other way, necking is fine. If you're necking, that's
rubbernecking.
1956 called. They want their term back.
Is rubbernecking like twerking?
I don't know. I wasn't around in 1956, Jim. But I
watched
that.
Happy Days.
Oh, you watched
Happy Days. I heard about necking there.
So when we look at this, though, let's talk about some things we can do to counteract this. So just postural awareness. Just be aware. If you're on the computer all day, if you're on your phone, your tablet, lift up. Take breaks every half hour or hour. Reach through the crown of the head. And if you put your fingers, let's all put our fingers to our chin. Sit up tall. And then gently push the chin toward the back of your neck and down a bit.
Mm-hmm.
Did you just say ow?
I was kidding.
Oh. But you want to elongate the back of the neck. And it's not that you're jamming the chin down, but feel that traction almost. Mm-hmm. So we take those little breaks. Feeling we can do this for the listeners. You're reaching the chin forward and pulling back. Forward and pulling
like
back.
Like a turtle?
Right, like a turtle. I like that. And then the side-to-side motion, like Egyptians, right?
Yeah.
And then we can also do an exercise.
You got any bangles?
Yeah, right. Where's my tambourine?
And then you just want to get massage and, you know.
Didn't the Bengals do walk like an Egyptian?
Yeah,
they did.
Yeah.
Okay.
But you know, as you're even mentioning this.
Okay. They love it.
Maybe we've rolled into that for the break.
I love it.
As you're even mentioning this, Jill, it's like immediately start thinking about posture and become posture conscious. Yes. And when you're talking about the lurking forward, it just reminds me of like, wow, we're kind of de-evolving and turning back into cavemen, you know.
It's true. But the last exercise I love, and you can take a hand to your forehead, lift up tall, and press forward as hard as you can. Then take the hand to the back of the head and push back as hard as you can. And then take one. So, Jim, this will be good for you to the side and push to the side, then to the other side. So,
are you familiar with static stretching?
I am. We're doing isometric and then there's static.
When I was a cross country and track runner, we used to do static stretching. So, this sounds similar.
What's static stretching? Exactly. Enlighten me.
Well, we'll get to another show. All right. And then, like boxers actually put those contraptions over their head with chains hanging and weights, and they actually pull their head up and down, right, to keep their neck strong.
Oh, wow.
But utilize massage. I also love inversion tables, I love them. So, you guys are looking
I'm
at
like,
me
what
like,
is I've heard. I didn't want to ask.
Sounds like some CIA torture technique.
You remember gravity boots?
Yeah.
So it's a table you lie on, and you actually are supported. You can get it to any angle, and you can go completely upside down and perpendicular to the floor. But it's fantastic. It decompresses the spine.
Sounds like, you know, it's people have back problems. They're like, I feel like just hanging and stretching my whole body out.
Yeah, and just think you're a golfer, right?
Yeah.
Balancing a golf ball on top of the tee. That's how it should be. The ears over the shoulders over the hips. And just take these moments to be aware.
Wait. Is my head a golf ball or a bowling ball?
You know what? I'm going to tell you, Jim. It can be
balloon.
It may be a bowling ball with a golf ball balanced on top.
Both.
Uh-huh. Mm. I'm getting creative here. So anyway, but I just encourage people because think, where do you want your head to be? You see these people that are like 80 and 90 and they're walking hunched over. We don't want that. We have options to take care of that.
I thought that was osteoporosis, so it's not. It's
also,
a lot of posture.
No, but it is. It's postural, but it's osteoporosis, so we have that compound thing going on. It's
just
both. It's
fight
poor
it.
Posture. Fight it. We got have it. Options. Eat well. Take care. Breathe. I adore all of you.
That's Amen. Awesome. Nice Thank you, job, Jill. Jill. Thank you, Jill.
So
golf clap. Okay, we'll make a transition here. We in a moment, after we do our Legends of Rock segment with April, we have a wonderful guest for our second half of the show, Mima Ransom with the FITA Museum Fashion Council. Brought to us this morning by our food stalker, where fashion and food collide. Sandy Ward will be in here later with Mima, and we'll have a great time. But before we get to that,
Legends.
April, we got Legends of Rock.
Legends of Rock.
We were trying to figure out who's going to be our featured artist today. So we had some conversations. We came up with a true legend crossing many genres and decades, and one of my favorites. Who do we have?
We came up with David Bowie, and I'm doing something a little different for everybody who's heard me do Legends of Rock before. I usually talk about the history of the artist, which I'll do as well today, and then play clips from some of their most famous songs, but I created a medley of some
a mashup of sorts?
Yeah, of his most famous songs, and I'm going to play that quick right now, and then we'll go into a little history of David Bowie.
Awesome.
Ground control to Major Tom.
8, 7, 6.
Commencing countdown, engines on.
3, 2,
check ignition.
1.
and may God's love be with you. This is ground control to Major Tom. You've really made the grade, and the papers want to know whose shirts you wear. Ziggy played guitar, jamming good with Weird and Gilly and the Spiders from Mars. He played it left hand, but made it too far. Became the special man, then we were Ziggy's band.
All right, so there's a little David Bowie medley for you.
Ooh, nice.
So Jim suggested David Bowie for this week. And so, you know, I know a little bit about him. I start doing my research. It's like, okay, so David Bowie's a singer, songwriter, multi-instrumentalist, record producer, arranger, actor, also a painter and collector of fine art.
Married to an amazing
Curian,
model.
Like, yeah, yeah, married to a beautiful model. Yeah. And so I'm like, okay, Jim, so I'm reading about this guy. I'm going to cover this guy in about 3 minutes, really. So I read all about him. I'm trying to touch on the high points, that sort of thing. So we'll talk about kind of how he got started. At the age of 13... he was inspired by jazz music, so he picked up the saxophone, and that's pretty much where it all started. He was born David Robert Jones. So does anyone know how he got the last name Bowie?
No.
He's an archer.
All right, so he actually changed it from Jones to avoid being confused with the Monkees singer Davy Jones.
Oh, wow.
And he took the name Bowie from the knife.
Daydream Believer.
From the knife?
Yeah, the knife brand name Bowie.
The Bowie knife.
Yeah.
Very cool.
Yeah, so by the year 1966... he had the new name, long hair, and aspirations of stardom. So in 1969, he made it on the charts with the song Space Oddity, mm-hmm. which we just played in that medley. In 1972, Bowie got a glimpse of the power of pop. His performance of Ziggy Stardust was said to be the performance that turned Bowie into a star. In the late 70s, he collaborated with John Lennon on Fame, which came out of an impromptu session and was a last-minute addition to the album Young Americans. In 81, Bowie recorded Under Pressure, which appeared on Queen's album Hot Space the following year. The song reached number one in the UK.
Which inspired which rap hit by a certain white rap artist?
Changes?
No. Under Pressure.
Under Pressure. Who was it?
Vanilla Ice.
Oh, you would know that, yeah.
Dun, dun,
their
dun,
designer,
dun, dun, dun.
Bro.
I would never
Jim,
know that.
Jim, a.k.a. M.O.M.
You know what? I was just going to say, Jim. I was
my 5.0.
I knew you were going to wrap this
down
in
so
a...
my head can't blow. Yo.
Oh, man.
No, yeah. Anyway, go ahead.
Wow. He's got skills.
What? Yeah, he does.
I thought he was going to wrap us into 2015, and I'm so glad we got a little taste of that.
He just never seems to amaze me, Jim.
Yeah.
So, April, what
all
else?
Right. Yo, yo, okay. So, where was I? This latest album that we're just talking about, an 83 Bowie released album, Let's Dance. This sold 7 million copies and became actually his most successful album of his career.
That's when I first got exposed to Bowie. Mm-hmm. It's early 80s, Modern Love, Let's Dance, China Girl.
And we know you can dance. You kind of keep it right here, right?
You cannot sit still and listen to that song. It's like you've got to dance.
Yeah. Let's Dance. So the 1990s were really busy for Bowie. He collaborated in the studio, appearing in films such as Exhuming Mr. Rice, touring endlessly. On September 11th, 2011, David gave an unforgettable performance at the Madison Square Garden in New York City. He opened the show with a raw rendition of the Simon and Garfunkel classic America and followed with an uplifting rendition of his own Heroes. David Bowie has been touring, performing, collaborating for over 46 years. He has released over 30 albums and is still growing strong with his latest album released last March, The Next Day. This was a pretty good quote, I thought, from Rolling Stone magazine about David Bowie. As was the case with Miles Davis and jazz, Bowie has come not just to represent his innovations, but to symbolize modern rock as an idiom in which literacy, art, fashion, style, sexual exploration, and social commentary can be rolled into one.
Wow. Awesome. So the reason I picked David Bowie for this week was two reasons. One, our guest coming up, Mima Ransom, and we're going to lead into the song Fashion by David Bowie. But I also just wanted to hear you with your Minnesota accent say Bowie. I want to hear you say Bowie and all your
really,
little
is that
O's
all
coming
it was?
In. I just wanted to hear it. And
you
so
just
now
wanted
I'm fulfilled now. Because
feel good
that.
Now?
I do. I feel great.
Okay.
Just a reminder, KX93.5, Laguna's only FM. Jim Bastian filling in for Scott Hayes is under the weather. April, that was an awesome Legends of Rock segment.
Thanks. I know it's a little short. I mean, I could have gone on and on about him.
Yeah,
but
for sure.
Might as well touch on the high points.
He's sexy. I had such a crush on him.
Really? You did?
Yeah.
See, he never did that much before. Yeah. I mean, like, Jim's leotard right now is much better than...
Yes,
wait,
it is.
What?
It's bright red.
What?
Yeah,
nobody knows.
They don't. I told you I'd wear it.
That's why we're not filming.
Yeah.
Exactly. I have a tunic on, and when I raise my hand...
Whoa.
It gets a little much. A little more than you want.
A little much.
Careful.
Awesome.
Careful. All right, so we'll be back in just a couple of minutes after a song that's appropriate of our next guest with, again, Sandy Ward, our food stalker, and Mima Ransom from FITM.
Bye, everyone.
Thank you.
KX93.5 Laguna's only FM. I'm Jim Bastian in for Scott Hayes this morning. You're listening to OC Caravan. That was David Bowie's Fashion. April Johnson just finished a great Legends of Rock segment. And Sandy's playing with
you. Really don't even need to put them on if you don't want. As long as I can hear you, that's all that matters.
So, Sandy Ward, the blogger extraordinaire, food stalker, where fashion and food collide, or no, sorry, food and fashion collide. Want to get that in the right order. Sandy's brought us a wonderful guest this morning. Sandy, why don't you tell us who's with us and what inspired you to bring the lovely Mima in this morning?
Well, as all of our followers know and listeners out there, my passion is where food and fashion collide. So very excited and honored to have the one, the only, Mima Ransom in the studio this morning. A little golf clap.
Golf clap for Mima.
Entrepreneur, businesswoman, teacher, Fit'em. Her list is endless.
Fit'em. What's Fit'em?
Fit'em.
Fashion Welcome. Institute of Design and Merchandising. Thank you for having me. What an introduction.
Welcome, Mima. Welcome. So, Sandy, I have some experience with Fit'em. So I'll go back to college. So UCLA, we had a fraternity, and we like to have parties with girls. So we normally have what's called an exchange with a sorority, where the sorority girls would come over to our fraternity house. We'd have a party. So we thought it might be a fun idea to have an exchange with the girls from Fit'em in the downtown campus. Uh-huh. So when I was in college, we actually had a party with a bunch of students from what I called then FIDM back in 1988. So that was my first experience. A lot of fun girls, really smart, very well dressed, yeah. Very hip.
You explained exactly what the Fit'em student looks like. I bet you had a lot of fun because they know how to have fun with lots of fashion.
Absolutely.
In a stylish way.
Right.
In a stylish way. Mima's background is just incredible. You know, I was looking up on the internet, of course, on LinkedIn, and just some of the statements here that I pulled up with regard to her background, if I could just share a few. Mima Ransom is a person who can balance both her creative, high-energy leadership style with business side that focuses on bottom-line follow-through, results and attention to detail, enthusiastic, optimistic, bases her decisions and actions on concrete experience. It's just one thing that was noted here. Mima Ransom is one of the most elegant, and I ditto, gracious, creative, and organized professionals that I've had the pleasure to work with. She recently choreographed a large group of non-professional supermodels for a charity event. Charities are near and dear to her heart, as we'll discuss here today, that would have driven most mere mortals to drink, and heavily, I might add. Mima is a force of nature to be reckoned with, which I'd like to talk about and share with our listeners. It's back in 1992, where she has experience as a business owner, and like to talk about the challenges and opportunities in opening up her very own exclusive lingerie store at Fashion Island.
Now, I want to hear about this, Mima.
This is something that's going to interest
lots
Jim.
Of stories.
There's a book in there somewhere, but share with us as from a woman's point of view. Back in that particular time, you know, this is a very conservative area.
It is a very conservative area. I remember I approached Irvine Company regarding opening store in Fashion Island, and I told them I'm going to bring the most exclusive lingerie store to Fashion Island. I remember it was the total silence in the room. And I go like, would you please give me opportunity to show you what I will bring to United States? And by the time I was finishing introducing all my collection from Paris and London, I brought probably Le Jebis, Ronsard, Gemma, La Perla, Fogal. People have never heard these names to United States. In about 8 years, I can tell everybody and anybody was my best customer. The whole scenario have changed. It was the fabulous experience, great customers. We did a lot of movie stars. A lot of movie stars would fly to Orange County and shop at my store and fly back.
Wow.
And you were one of the first to do natural and organic fabrics, as well as there was the latest knitting technology from Italy.
Yeah. I went to Italy, bought the machines, and brought it to United States. Because I had no intention of going to China. It wasn't fashion. So I brought it to the United States and set up vertical manufacturing. What that means is from dye to finish, we did everything in-house.
Interesting. So tell me about the customer experience when you had your store, because one of the things, men are often embarrassed to step into a lingerie store and buy lingerie, and it kind of seems weird. So
that was probably my best customer were men. That was a surprise to me.
Oh, you need this, and you need this, and the garters, and you need the stockings, and you need the bra and the panties, and
never ending. First of all, everybody was my size and my the people who work for me, their size. They were all size too. And they will always say, my wife is just about your size. I go, yeah, are you sure? Give me her height.
I think they're lying.
One day give me the height and the weight. That's okay. We send them home with the right stuff. But I have made so many marriages happier, may I say. I got a thank you note from the wives and girlfriends several
sometimes
times.
Sometimes from the same
sometimes
guy?
Sometimes both.
Yeah. Sometimes several, and I won't talk about it. But it was truly one of the fabulous business experiences I've ever had. So I'm an entrepreneur, quickly decided I should do men's night only. So what we did, we closed our store for public. We put a tent up front. This is in Newport Beach Fashion Island.
Right.
And I brought 12 models from Ford Agency, and they will model lingerie with private invitation only. And me and my husband were probably the most popular people in Orange County.
Wow.
Everybody wanted to attend.
Wasn't there some controversy with not controversy, but challenges, I guess, with these events and the rest of the storekeepers in the mall and maybe you doing your own exclusive events? And
there was, but I believe if you kind of walk in a line that you do it elegantly, I think they came along that it was a kind of a breaking
something new.
Exactly. It was never done in United States. So they
and we needed it.
I know it. I still get stopped at Fashion Island several times. Say, when are you opening your next store? I said, it's not happening. But it was a fabulous experience.
Good, good. And that's going to lead us to your wonderful, your world of being an entrepreneur, fashion trends, business education, and you are the chair for FITM. And
FITM Fashion Council.
Tell us why that's important to you and why that's important to FITM and how the council serves the fashion community in general.
It's really close to my heart. In every project I do in charity, I bring fashion education together. And it's really, really important for me to marry them together in a fun way, because there's so many charity we are competing. So I wanted to put our mark with the stuff that I know and I'm passionate about. So FITM is, Fashion Council is founded about 3 years ago, and we are the fundraising arm for the FITM Museum. And we do the project for them, we do acquisition, we do event, and we try, currently on my table, I have a fabulous project. I call it once in a lifetime opportunity.
You're perfect for that.
I absolutely am excited about it because it gives me the chance to raise funds that it's directly related to education. FITM has an 8,000 square foot museum in LA, and we have 15,000 items in our museum. Our museum not only have a permanent collection, the part that I'm really excited, we have a study collection. The study collection is a couture collection that it goes to students' classroom, and they get to touch some of the stitches, some of the fabrics that they don't exist in.
You know, designing clothes myself, what a way for a student to learn is to reference our past and our history and just up close and personal to see the stitching and the workmanship and the boning. It's such a great education tool.
I've been in the world of fashion for all these years. I think we are in a point that we are going to changing. The most fashion is changing today than ever. Because I just came from a conference. We are bringing technology, fashion, and well-being together for the first time in the history.
Wow.
We are going to see things we've never seen before.
And share with us who Helen Larson was. I know there's a big benefit that's coming up this Wednesday that you're going to be participating with. But there are 1,400 pieces of historic dress. Helen Larson was an L.A.-based dress historian, And some of her designs are from 1600 to 1950. Is that correct?
Yes.
And you are working tirelessly to raise,
$2.5 million to raise for, to acquire this collection.
To acquire the collection.
The collection is really once in a lifetime, not only for FIDM, for Southern California. Because a collection like this has, to my knowledge, have never come together for sale. It's 1,100 pieces, and it's $2.5 million. It's about an average $2,500 for item. There are a lot of notable objects in this collection. Queen Victoria's garments, Tsar of Russia, Empress Eugenie of France. And these are items that they will, if they knew these are leaving the country, they would have stopped. Because these are historical items.
To be preserved.
Helen Larson was an amazing woman. She for 50 years, she would go to Europe, go to the, like, a, I would say, a shop, to the place that they are doing, showing some old clothing. She will buy the whole bunch of them. Because she
come
wanted
with trunks,
one
Louis Vuitton
item.
Trunks full.
Trunks, oh. But she only wanted one item. So she pulled that one item, put it aside to her collection, and she was smart enough to loan the rest of it to movies for
wow.
period clothing.
What a visionary.
So really quickly, let's interject. We're listening KX93.5 Laguna News Only FM. We're here with Mima Ransom, Sandy Ward, our food stalker. Why don't we take a quick break, about 60 seconds. We'll come back and we'll bring what you're working on now in relation to the Helen Larson collection and some of the other things that we can talk about. So, April.
KX935. We'll be back in a second.
Listening to KX93.5 Laguna News Only FM. We're here this morning with Sandy Ward, our food stalker, and our wonderful guest from FIDM, Mima Ransom. Mima, so my daughter's here with her friend Hannah, my daughter Catherine. Got two young girls who are very interested in fashion. And one of the reasons that I've seen and observed over the years with young women especially is the advent of these reality shows that focus on fashion, notably Project Runway, which in my house it seems like every Thursday that the TV... Every DVR in the house is locked to that, and so I can't watch the shows I want to watch, so I'm stuck watching Project Runway with them. But I've actually grown to appreciate it. So can you talk a little bit about how shows like Project Runway have affected the fashion industry and where you see the future of that going?
Do you know that happens at FIDM, Project Runway?
I did not know.
Yes. Project Runway, Tim Gunn is one of our very best hosts that who really helps FIDM. He's big. I think what it has happened is, like any other reality show, it brought it home. We can touch it. We can feel it. We can be part of it. We can get excited with them. We lose with them. We gain with them. So we get excited. And I think the other thing that it has really done, got the parents to see the end result. Because reality is the cost of sending these students to these is pretty high. They see how fabulous is the final product. It sort of start at the beginning, show the final product. It has really, really helped fit
in. I can imagine. One of the things, and this is my own stereotype bias that maybe I had, was that you tend to think about young kids going through school. They go to college. It's a normal four-year curriculum, and that was the norm, and that's where the smart kids went. But as I look at it and I appreciate more, so much goes into the educational aspect of fashion and design and merchandising, not to borrow the whole title of the school, but... it occurs to me that people like me are maybe a little short-sighted about the impact of these educational programs, and that you don't have to go to a four-year university in the conventional sense to have a viable career and get a true education.
I have to tell employment. You, our youth today is absolutely amazing. I am so excited day in and day out to interact. They are smart, they are savvy, they are funny, they know how to live well. They are amazingly exquisite collection of the kids that if you are not interacting with them day in and day out, you really don't appreciate them. Every day I have a class, I ask my student, who wants to be entrepreneur for this day? All the hand goes out and I tell them, okay, do you want to not drive a car? You won't have a car to drive. They stay, keep their hands up. You can't eat. They still keep their hands up. So they are very driven.
No iPhone? They still keep their hands up?
Well, the iPhone, I don't go there because I know I lose if I go there.
Absolutely.
I know my limitations. No. But, you know, it's amazing. And I think Project Runway and other projects like that have done amazing
job. Raised awareness.
To make the fashion what it is really. It's a way of life. It's our signature.
So, and again, kind of going into my own personal ignorance about this, when I was learning about the FITA Museum Fashion Council, I was kind of like, well, why is that important? But as I read and learned more, and I've heard you this morning, obviously if you take another curriculum, say just art, art history, museums and galleries have a very important impact on education and bringing the young people along and letting them get exposed to things. Why isn't it the same for fashion, obviously? So to have the collection that you're trying to pursue with Helen Larson becomes an incredibly important part of your educational process. So why don't you talk a little bit about how you tie in now the education and the forward-thinking idea of fashion with the historical perspective.
Well, I have to tell you, one of the things, the biggest challenge I have when I sit in front of a big donor and want to ask for $1 million for a project, and they are always saying, for fashion? I go like, it's really not for fashion, it's education. And that's really what Helen Larson collection is so very important. It is really the base for the education, 200 years of history, that it is going to be lost completely if we don't acquire this collection.
I think we have a tendency to believe that fashion is always forward-thinking and that there is no real relationship between, say, a Victorian dress and what might be in fashion in the next 3 or 4 years. But there I guess
is.
I'm wrong
there's
in that.
There is very much so
and
a relation.
If I can really put this in a perspective, these are Picassos and Rembrandt of the art in the world of the fashion. These are pieces that one of a kind, and some of our garments, they don't even make that fabric anymore. So for our student to see that and
when you
touch
and when you think about it, you know, take any top designer, somebody like Tom Ford, you know, Vivienne Westwood, they had to reference our past. Vivienne Westwood, the bustle, you know, in the back of her skirts and her gowns, there's definitely a hint of history there.
To raise this money, we have come up with a really clever and creative idea. What we do is we call it adoption. You can adopt a
like adopting
garment.
A pet.
Yes, almost. But this is
or
more
a
fun.
Tree.
This is more fun. Actually, I had experience of going through adoption last night with a very special lady, and she was so excited. What we do, we have 1,100 pieces from $100,000 to $500. You can pick any level you like. You can adopt the garment. Your name would be in the museum next to the item forever. These items will travel all over the world with your name. Now, we have had people as a birthday party got together and adopted a $1,000 item for a girlfriend. What a wonderful gift to give to somebody.
Oh, that is. I didn't know about that. That's interesting.
It is. That's how we are raising the money, and it's a lot of fun. This is truly a once-in-a-lifetime opportunity.
This is your talent, though, is bringing together the education and the fashion and charity.
So, Mima, let me hit on that for a second. So, you know, I brought Hannah and Catherine into the studio this morning, and they're both interested in fashion. What advice would you give to a young woman today about how to get involved in this industry and really understand it and learn and then turn it into a viable career path?
I think it's a business. It's an entrepreneur business. Because the world has become so small internationally and nationally, we are competing all the time. It is fun, it's creative, but number one area is really to become an entrepreneur in order to be really successful in the world of fashion.
So understanding all aspects of business.
Absolutely.
And so at FITM, does the curriculum go into that, not just the design aspects, but how to turn it into a viable business?
One of the classes that I teach is how do you put a collection together and get it to market that is incorporated sales group, training, putting a line together, pricing it. This is at the beginning of their year. It's in the first year they learn how to do this.
So one of the things I've noted is I'm involved in a number of different nonprofits, and there seems to now be a correlation that every charity focuses on using fashion as a way to raise money for their cause. So, for example, with the Mission Hospital Foundation that I'm on the board of, there's a fashion show raising money for our Camino Health Center in San Juan Capistrano. My daughter's involved in National Charity League. Their big fundraiser of the year is the Junior Class Fashion Show. Why is it that fashion becomes such a tie-in to nonprofits right now? What do you see that correlation?
I think we all relate to it.
It works.
I think, yeah, brings it home. Make it
for men
special,
and women.
For men and women. And I think it's a... But in, just coming back to Helen Larson, one of the things we decided that we have some really interesting fashion-related events. And there are a few of them coming in 2015. One of them is the royalty we are going to have with LA Opera, who will be playing privately for us while we are sipping our tea and learning about the fashion at the LA Museum. And then we are going to have a private tour of the museum.
When's that coming up?
That's going to be February 23rd, 2015.
Can anybody attend that, or is that sort of a limited event?
No, it is, but we only have 75 tickets, and we sell the... Last time we had a wine tasting event, we sold our tickets in 48 hours.
Wow.
So well, that's right up my alley.
Really fast. The other one that I'm really excited, we call Fashion Council Voyager. We are taking trips. The next one is coming to London, and we are going from June 28th till July 6th, and we'll be touring Alexander McQueen Savage Beauty Exhibition, which
I
is the most
saw that in
beautiful
New York
exhibition.
At the Met. It was life-changing. If anyone out there, listeners, have a chance to take this trip, it was life-changing for me. It was incredible.
The L.A. Jewelry Antique Show is coming up on January 14th.
That's this next Wednesday.
And we are lucky to be the beneficiary for their gala. And the tickets, Vanguard tickets are $200. The Friends tickets are $125. It's a fabulous event for the jewelry, antique, art. I believe 60,000
people. Over 60,000 people. It's a big show.
And it is going to be, and you can purchase tickets online, and it is 100% benefiting the Fashion Council.
Excellent.
My favorite is the fabulous event, which is, we did it for, this is our third year. First year we did a runway show with Cadillac, and FITM student, this was fabulous, created a couture collection, runway collection with the car parts.
At Fashion Island? This is the one at Fashion Island.
Wow.
So well done. Great
Mima,
energy.
I can't thank you enough for coming in this morning.
You
it's been a tremendous education, and the events coming up, we'll do our best to support those. Sandy.
Thrilled to have you here, Mima. Thank you for getting up.
You're listening to
of Dawn.
OC Caravan. I'm Jim Bastian, KX93.5, Laguna's Only FM, filling in for Scott Hayes. We'll see Scott next week. April, thank you. Why don't we take us out with one of the most iconic fashion songs from the 1980s.
All right. Thank you
we
so
love
much.
It.
Thank
Ciao.
You, ladies.